Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Myron Dweck. He has over 22 years of experience as an educator and administrator in both Canada and New Zealand. Through his current district position, as well as working with educators around the world, Myron continues to develop grading, assessment, and reporting systems, which give students a greater opportunity to show what they understand and play a significant role in the reporting of their learning. Myron visits schools, districts, and organizations, both in person and virtually, to share his ongoing journey, ready-to-use tools, and firsthand experiences. Recently, Myron's presentations have diverged to include a global education trends and broader social economic realities that impact learning. Myron has been published in EL Magazine, EdCan, and other publications. His best-selling book, Grading Smarter, Not Harder, Assessment Strategies That Motivate Kids and Help Them Learn, was released by ASCD in July 2014. And in 2015, ASCD released a video project based on his own school district entitled Smarter Assessment in the Secondary Classroom, Ask Them. It's a three-part streaming series focused on student voice and empowerment and is available at ASCD.org. ASCD has also published his most recent book, published a year ago in January 2021, entitled Giving Students a Say. Myron and his family currently live in British Columbia, where he is working in District 67. And we'll talk about Myron's new role that is coming up starting in February. We'll talk about that on the podcast. So welcome to the podcast, Myron.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell me about a time you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out. And I think that's something that's currently you're working on right now.
Well, I am. And it's kind of the nature of my changing position. I feel like I'm in the trenches as we speak. British Columbia is kind of on the precipice of taking on a whole new reporting order. And essentially, one of the biggest pieces to that is that students K to nine are going to be reported on one of four words, with apparently not a letter grade or percentage in sight. Those words in the draft reporting order anyway are emerging, developing, proficient, and extending. So we have a lot of work to do. From report cards to teacher understanding of what those words mean and student understanding of what those words mean in different contexts and critical areas. It's going to be quite something. So yeah, here we go.
Yeah, so it's kind of working through that. And is this something that's been going on that they've been planning for a while and now it's going to start to take shape?
That's a great question. I was saying to somebody just yesterday, about 2 years ago, maybe a little better, the province kind of reorganized the curricular documents to be content that teachers need to cover, but then what they called curricular competencies, the understanding part, it's one thing to know the content, it's another thing to do and understand. And that's where you'll see, the higher order verbs of create a model and analyze relationships between and so on and so on. I think honestly that this reporting order is kind of the other shoe falling, if that makes any sense. It's one thing to bring in new standards. And then it's another thing, a whole nother story. So how are we going to report on those? And I think there's a sound argument, and it all depends how much you want to get into this, but I think there's a really, really sound argument that as you get into maybe more complex verbs that students need to do, like analyze and model and design, some of our old reporting language of 98% might not fit as well with compared to a description of extended and one of the words embedded in that is sophisticated, which I'm a big fan of. The student demonstrates a sophisticated approach to the understanding. I kind of like that. I spent a long time in history 12 teaching history 12 here in British Columbia, and I would have loved to have a category of sophisticated understanding. So I think that's it's a multifaceted rollout by our province, and this has been the latest iteration of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And is that going to then automatically change over this spring semester, or are they getting ready to launch those just the grading and how everybody grades for next school year?
It would be next school year.
Okay.
And those curricular documents that I mentioned, they're already in legislation here. They're already in use. I wouldn't say everybody necessarily has fully incorporated them and necessarily understands them, but that's by their own admission, some folks. Mm-hmm. But right now the date is set for July 1st, 2022. Everything after that would be reported in that fashion.
Okay. Okay. So talk to me a little bit about the role that you've been in up until the end of January as a district vice principal for communicating student learning and some of the work that you've done in that role, and then the role that you're transitioning to on February 1st.
Okay. Well, just to clarify, the role you mentioned there, and this might be my fault for not being clear enough on this, that is the role I am transitioning into.
Okay.
I am coming out of a return to a high school and okay. being what in some places in the U.S. would be called an associate principal, here in Canada would be called a vice principal. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, if you really want to talk about the trenches, I've been in them here too. I returned to a school during COVID when it was, the public health authority would call you up and say, you need to send these five kids home and this class needs to isolate. And I mean, it's a unique a time as I've ever been in a school. So I was in administration since August of 2020. Mm-hmm. I've been in a school, and it's been amazing. I even got the chance to teach a leadership class here. So I hadn't been an educator per se for quite a while, and that was kind of a real gift to mm-hmm. To land back in the classroom. So I'm transitioning out of that and into a district role for communicating student learning and assessment. So that's what I'm heading into.
Okay. And so that will be in the same district, correct?
Absolutely. And it entails visiting elementary, middle, and high. Mm-hmm. To again get ready for this change we're talking about. I'm leading a team here in the district for some folks looking at the report card side and some folks looking at how we're going to train teachers and help them. So I'm leading that team. So district-wide, yeah, same district.
Okay. And I think just kind of when you're transitioning over to no grades and using these indicators, emerging, developing, and proficient, is there going to be a parent training piece involved? Because I think that will be very confusing for parents.
Ooh, that's a great question. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think we haven't always done a great job of recognizing who all of our clients are and particularly who are some of those groups. And obviously mm-hmm. parents are one of them. And the other thing I'm going to say, and I got to be careful here, Dana, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Dana, I think something really changed with COVID, and that is that, well, lots of things changed, but one was that parents moved much closer to the stage when it comes to this thing called education, because they were at home navigating some things that they never had to navigate before. You know, I remember my wife helping my son with his math and plugging through it in ways that, you know, took her right back to being in high school and trying to figure out grade 10 math. I think for that reason alone, our parents are going to probably be that much more in tune with what is going on. Cause I think they've had to be. So the good news here is that I'm leaning on some of the work I've done in other districts. For instance, mm-hmm. I worked extensively with Roseville, California, where we shifted hundreds of middle school teachers through this very same thing, shifting away from percentages and moving towards proficiency scale. I talk about that shift a lot in my latest book. And one of the things we did was a parent video embedded mm-hmm. on the website that parents obviously could visit anytime, watch it as many times as they want. And I see doing that in our district as well. Mm-hmm. You know, a parent that stops me in the grocery aisle or the dad I play hockey with or whatever, who say, what's with this change? I got no problems explaining it. I say, you know what? You might also want to go to the website. There's a 4.5 minute video that explains the why, the what, mm-hmm. and the how. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. yeah, we have to pay attention to that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also wondering for the grade 12 students, when they're applying to colleges, will there be a letter grade provided to them for their transcript?
Well, that's a great question. And here's the deal. Again, I work with schools all over the world. Mm-hmm. And let's take the American School of Monterrey, Mexico, for example. Mm-hmm. They have largely taken on a scale very much like BC's. I swear mm-hmm. well, that they kind of looked at British Columbia's in some ways and go, that's interesting. And we just grabbed it and use it. Mm-hmm. They send students to universities all over the world. So really mm-hmm. what you have to ask yourself for the university is what language do you want to speak? And mm-hmm. I would almost envision this a bit like you're going to another country. So you're, mm-hmm. so you need to fill out some documents and you're going to South Korea. Well, what language do they speak there? They speak South Korean. Okay. Well, let's make sure we translate it to that. Mm-hmm. So let's liken that to universities. We have a 4-level scale, let's say in our school, and where are you heading to? Harvard. What do they need? They need percentage actually. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's convert to a percentage. Let's translate it to that language. You're going to another school that needs a GPA. Another school needs mm-hmm. a letter grade. I think these are all different languages that can represent the same idea. And that's kind of the analogy I'm using these days. And so far it's working for me. What country mm-hmm. are you going to? We'll speak that language. And mm-hmm. they do. That's exactly what they do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like you're saying, it depends on where you're studying. I mean, I finished high school actually in Norway and they had, you know, 6 was the highest grade. It was 1 through 6. And, you know, if you're getting a document and have to use it to apply to another college somewhere else, you know, like you said, you just translate it to be fitting for that. And it's not really as complicated as it seems. So, go ahead.
And I want to throw in that they're not shifting grades 10 to 12 right now. So, mm-hmm. so I think they're being fairly intentional, I guess, in that way that we don't need to try to figure out the university piece right now. Mm-hmm. Because grades 10 to 12 are remaining with percentages and letter grade. Mm-hmm. But I also should throw in that that's not where it ends, where the all students are being asked to self-report on what are called core competencies. So that's things like critical thinking and creative thinking. What's your social and personal responsibility? So there's going to be each school right now, and some of them on a district level, but some on school level, are needing to construct the templates or the tools or the mechanisms for students to do that. That could look like a portfolio of some of the things you're most proud of or most interested in. And there's also set to be a student goal setting piece. So there's a number of moving parts to this, not just a new proficiency scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's multiple ways to show proficiency.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But don't forget the universities are shifting on this too. I mean, mm-hmm. my son is applying for universities right now and he's having to write personal profile letters. He's needing to write what's been most influential in his life. Some of these applications for universities are specifically mentioning, do not talk about your transcript or your grades in this section. We want to mm-hmm. find out about you as a person. Well, mm-hmm. I can assure you, Dana, the University of Manitoba wasn't asking me that back in 1990, right? Mm-hmm. So it's shifting all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much focus on the grades, right? They want to see a well-rounded person, because if you're not socially, emotionally ready for college, you might have studied and gotten good grades, but you need to, you know, be ready in every area. So interesting. And yeah, I was kind of thinking about that also from the point of view of a parent of a middle schooler, and they use 1 through 4 for standards-based grades for their grading in the classroom. But then when they have the report cards come out, they'll transfer that to A, B, C, D, and F.
Yeah, and I don't know if you even want to get me started on the whole conversion thing. Like we do an awful lot of converting and convert some more. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I'll say I write about this in my latest book, Giving Students a Say, but it's a bit like that old, what was that game called where you sit in a circle called Phone Booth or something, where somebody starts with a statement and they whisper it to the next and that person whispers it to the next and you see how close mm-hmm. the, I don't know if you ever played this, but it's some party game where you see how close the original message is to the one that eventually gets spit out the other side of the circle. And sometimes I think it's a little bit like that with our grading. Like, I don't know why we're so addicted to converting all the time, but anyway, that's a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's move on and talk about your books. So I mentioned sure. in the bio, you had Grading Smarter, Not Harder, mm-hmm. that was published in 2014. And then Giving Students a Say, which was published just a year ago. So tell me a little bit about how they're similar, how they're different, and then how could a educator use each of the books adapting with the changing times between 2014 and 2021?
Sure, that's a great question. Boy, first off, I didn't think Grading Smarter, Not Harder was ever going to come to be. Okay. Mm-hmm, let's be clear about that. I wrote an article for ASCD called How I Learned to Break My Own Rule and Give Retests, something like mm-hmm, that. I'm paraphrasing mm-hmm. it. And I remember writing in there that I had more to talk about than just retests, with these are some of the recent changes I was making in my classroom. Anyway, they wrote me back and said, what do you mean you got more here? Like, are you talking like a book? Mm-hmm. So it eventually became a book, but I didn't read the contract close enough. It was supposed to be one of their short, kind of the short book series they were doing at the time, where all the covers were the same and all that. And I remember when the acquisitions editor called me up and she said, did you read the contract, Meyer? And I said, not that closely, no. I'm not saying that's a good life practice, but she said, well, I have good news and bad news. And the bad news is you delivered twice as many words as your contract stipulated. Like, I was supposed to send them 30,000, and I think I ended up sending like 90. And she said, so the bad news is you have to carve that.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Down to 75. And I said, mm-hmm. well, I thought you needed 30,000 words. She goes, no, we're going to make it a feature book. We really like it. So it mm-hmm. wasn't even supposed to be. And it became a book. And what it was for me, it was kind of chronicling 6 years of trying things in my classroom and what impact those were having on all learners, definitely struggling learners, definitely learners who had been kind of on the fringe or disenfranchised. Starting to give retests when I didn't believe that they had any place in the classroom, and then fundamentally changing some of the ways I graded and stopping the grading of homework, for example, and mm-hmm. and some of these things that at first seemed bizarre to me, and then as I tried them, not only did they work better for me, I found they were working far better for students. And then as I started jotting down the stories and the anecdotes from students, that became a huge part of Grading Smarter, Not Harder. So if I was to describe the first book, it is, here's some changes I tried mm-hmm. from unit plans to retesting to homework to grading. And in the end, it turned out that they probably impacted relationships more in my classroom than anything else. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a teacher's perspective. Mm-hmm. If you look at the latest book, Giving Students a Say, it's kind of my second paradigm shift. And it was that Grading Smarter, Not Harder involved a whole bunch of changes for me. And I chronicled the positive impact they were having on students. And that was all well and good. But what I hadn't put together at that time yet was that students were still kind of on the outside of the assessment process. Assessment mm-hmm. was still something we were doing to students, not with them. And that's the pivotal change for the second book, that assessment needs to go back to its origins, which is the accedere in Latin, which mm-hmm. means to sit beside, not across mm-hmm. from. And that's in a nutshell what Giving Students a Say is all about. To the point where there's lots of similar topics, like I cover breaking down standards into digestible unit plans for students that have clear objectives and student friendly. If there's a big shift from the first book to the second, it's how do we actually open the door to students writing some of their own objectives within the scope of one of those units or within the scope of that topic. I wasn't into student self-reporting in the first book, and student self-reporting makes up a huge part of the second one. You know, the epiphany there is, who do you think the best person is to ask when it comes to a student's effort? Probably the student. Whereas I've been reporting on student effort all my career, hoping that I guess I see what manifestations of that effort, judging or guessing that effort exists. I mean, we can get into effort more if you want to, but I don't think I'm in the best place to judge somebody else's effort. I can't tell you how much effort you're putting into this podcast right now. I can surmise it by what I see. I might be able to compare it to how much effort I think I would have to put in to do what you're doing, but this might come so naturally and easy to you that I can't actually tell you how much effort this is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, it's like you said, when two students submit the same work, or, you know, a group is working on a project together and each person had a different role, it's hard to judge.
Very. And you know, I think, Dana, I'm going to curse you with the same thing I've been cursed with recently, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So what you just said there, if they hand in the same work and they're working on the same thing, Ken O'Connor recently wrote a little piece in EL Magazine around, we need to move away from this word work. And so I've been listening for it in my school, right? And it's, hey, get your work out. Do you have work to do? What are you going to work on at home tonight? And I think one of the shifts that Ken is talking about is I think we need to shift our focus towards learning. Mm-hmm. And I think that plays into the effort conversation, because, okay, maybe you put some effort in, maybe you didn't, but what did you learn? And how much are you pushing your learning? And the research right now around, you know, we probably need to be struggling about 15% of the time. So we all need to be exerting some effort into this thing called learning. So I don't know. It's there's lots to think about in regards to that conversation. And I think effort and learning are somewhat tied together.
Yeah, there's a lot in there, I think. And also just when we're talking about students who, you know, we're grading them on effort, participation, collaboration, you know, that also should be part of the student to grade. And, you know, even when I was teaching, you know, in the early 2010s, I would sometimes, you know, do the peer editing for the peer, you know, assessments as well, and have that be part of the total grade. But I think there's a lot of teachers that if we're grading group work, they're the only ones grading it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you look at one of the shifts I've seen in our building here, which has been fantastic, is what if the group endeavor is the learning piece? What if it wasn't even the product? So in other words, students might do I'm thinking about an example from our English department. Students might do a whiteboard movie, a 5-minute version of the novel that they're studying. So they got to tell their novel in, 5 minutes or less. Well, what if the teacher stopped worrying about the assessing of that project? In other words, we're going to have you do this as a group. We're going to watch it as a class. I'm going to bring some popcorn in. It's going to be like the movies. But the assessment you're going to get on novel structure and on plot and on conflict is going to be an individual assessment that each person needs to demonstrate their understanding. You know, it could be in a test format, it could be a reflection, it could be anything. But the group endeavor isn't graded at all. And it's kind of freeing. I tried it myself. It's wonderful. you know, unless you like those conversations of, well, she didn't do as much work as I did, and I did most of this. And I mean, I'd sooner do my own dental surgery with a pen than go through very many of those conversations again.
Yeah.
So
And that's kind of, it depends on the individual teacher, how they're going to grade things. And I know my middle schooler tends to get graded on group work as well. And That's just, yeah, I think there's still a lot of teachers out there that want to make sure kids are graded for everything, even homework, which everything. I moved away from 10 years ago. So,
yeah. But those are the teachers that are, you know, I know some of them personally. They're the, and I've been there. They're the ones who are sucking back coffee till 11:30 at night, trying to catch up on all this grading. And man, my life got way better when I started grading less. I guess I should plug the book. When I started grading smarter, not harder. Sorry. Selfless plug there.
Well, you have a lot of keynotes highlighted on your website. So
yeah.
Talk about a few of those presentations/keynotes that are most popular that people, you know, have had you out, you know, especially during the pandemic. And like people, if they were to have you come out and speak, what they could expect.
Yeah, well, the keynotes range from very practical. Like I have a keynote that's, you know, grading smarter, not harder in an hour. I mean, if you want the kind of the Cole's notes basics of my first 6 years of change, there's a keynote.
Yeah.
Personally, I find my other keynotes quite a bit. That's a great breakout session, but I have a number of keynotes that are a ton of fun to deliver and engage audiences with. One of them is, for example, one of my most recent is what can educators learn from advertisers? And what we do is we examine a number of ads. We examine, I was just going down the rabbit hole for a while on advertising. And I read a few books by Terry O'Reilly and a few other people. And I just started seeing all the connections to education in this, like, you know, there's a contract in advertising, for example. Why do you like some ads and find other ones annoying? Well, as long as the advertiser is abiding by the contract, you like it. And I go, what's the contract? Mm-hmm. Well, the contract is the ad must be polite, surprising, funny, or meaningful. And that's a rule in advertising. And I thought to myself, what if every instructional practice in the world needed to fit with either polite, meaningful, surprising, or humorous, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what the four were. So I ended up building a keynote around what are some of the main tenets, if you will, of advertising. And it just turned out that a lot of them collided with what I was writing about. You know, the whole first chapter in Giving Students a Say is about the elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. What is your elevator pitch for being a teacher? What's your elevator pitch for your assessment? How would you capture somebody's attention in 20 seconds or less about what you're doing? And that comes straight out of advertising. So I guess my foot was already into that conversation. Mm-hmm. Probably one of my most asked for keynotes of all time is a keynote called Ask Them, which makes the argument that, you know, looks at four different ways that we're all very, very different, from our jagged personalities, where I look at the NFL, to context matters. It really matters what environment we're in and how we act. So I kind of dance around through four main themes, and then I dive into, so what are ways that we can ask our students about their learning? It's been very, very popular. Probably the keynote I've done the most. So those really come to mind. One I've delivered quite a bit internationally, through Brazil, Ecuador, all over the place. It's a keynote called Failing Is an Option. Mm-hmm. It's meant to kind of catch your eye and go, what do you mean failing is an option? It's all about the fact that risk takers out there, from Steve Jobs to the Beatles to space exploration, enter their enterprises not knowing if they're going to work. Mm-hmm. It's built into the process that this might fly, it might not, but we're gonna learn something through it, that's for sure. And it makes the keynote makes the argument that that's actually one of the best ways that we learn, is to struggle, is to take risks, and to feel that unease. So those are some that come to mind. During COVID, by the way, I worked on a keynote called The Beauty of Constraints, and it plays a lot on the work of Adam Morgan and Mark Barden in their book, A Beautiful Constraint. And I just saw so many parallels for us during COVID on that. But that's become a become a keynote of mine as well, called Changes and Constraint.
Okay.
So yeah, that tells you about a few that I'm working on.
And do you tend to speak at different conferences throughout the year? For example, I usually speak at the same conferences, you know, different times throughout the year. Are there ones that you're, you know, may have a speaking engagement coming up in the spring?
I mainly freelance all over the place, but there are definitely groups that bring me back over and over again. I do a lot of work with First Educational Resources in based out of Wisconsin, Garth and Tammy Larson there. I have a number of just private kind of school visits coming up in the spring this year. So that's how it's shaping up to be. A trip to, again, another trip through Ecuador, through a variety of schools, number of trips to California, Utah, Idaho, lots of visits coming up. Most of them this year are, you know, it's a funny thing. I since the COVID pandemic, my phone has rung more and more from high schools who are ready to confront and deal with the need to change their grading practices and their assessment structures. And my examples come from high school, so it's probably one of the places I'm most comfortable. And I think that there's lots of speakers that aren't particularly comfortable getting out in front of the hostile high school group. but I have great days with high schools. But let's be clear, I visit schools and of all in all levels, and I attend a lot of, or am at a lot of conferences. So it just always is a mixture, and one year is different from the next.
Yeah. So I will definitely put a link in the show notes to your website. People can check out the descriptions of those keynotes, and you know, they'll get information about where to book you. Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
You know, well, I think when I, you know, when I said that I had just tried some things in my classroom, when I go all the way back to grading smarter, not harder, you know, I remember, I don't think that would have happened if I hadn't gone to this grading conference in Portland, Oregon, and listened to the likes of Rick Stiggins and Ken O'Connor. And I remember saying to my high school principal at the time, he had kind of twisted my arm to go down there with promise of a brew pub and Trailblazer tickets. I wasn't going to go to a grading conference at all. And when he first asked me, you want to go to a grading conference? I was like, no, who'd want to? Now that I'm a part of it, I'm like, no, everybody should go to a grading conference. But let's be clear, at the time, I just found it laughable. And so he said, well, there's like I said, we got there's basketball tickets in a brew pub. I said, okay, fine, I'll go to a grading conference. And I remember saying to him when we were there, and I've told thousands of educators this in the story of my session, because a lot of people ask me how I got started. And I remember being at that conference and thinking, oh, I guess I could be clearer with my students on the learning outcomes. And man, I do not have my head wrapped around retests yet, but maybe I could. And my principal at the time said, his name is Bill Bidlake. He said, you know, Myron, you can always go back to what you did before. And if there was a title of my assessment autobiography, I'd want to call it, you know, you can always go back to what you did before. Because with that little bit of assurance, I'd be like, oh yeah, okay. I can try that. I can try this, or I can try that. And I think sometimes teachers are sometimes caught in a trap that if they make a change, they think it has to be permanent. It has to be forever, you know? So, these days, if an administrator calls me and says, we're thinking about a change, what do you think? And I'll often say, you know what? I would pilot it at your freshman level right now. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. I said, yeah, I don't know if I'd roll it out school wide. Why don't you pilot it at your freshman level, see how it goes, and then roll it into grade 10 next year and keep the nines doing it. I said, you got to play the long game in this, not the short game. And so that's what I'm going to say. Could always go back to what you did before. So have the confidence to make a change and see how it goes.
Yeah. And I think that's, you need to be all in, and, you know, that means you can start out with that one grade level, but also, you know what you're doing and get more information from people who've been there, like yourself. For sure.
ask your students.
Yeah.
Ask them, hey, what could we have done? How could we have done this differently? Well, you know what you guys did? You rolled it out this way, but it really would have. That's what you do with your 10s the next year, say your grade 10s, and you also make that shift for your 9s. And in a blink of an eye, you've now got three, you know, next year it's rolled out to the 11s. And I don't know, I'm more in line with that. And there's three or four districts that I'm doing some work with right now that's following that very same pattern. Mm-hmm. Say, let's look 3, 4, 5 years out. What is this going to look like? Rather than trying to save the whole world in a week.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a multi-year rollout type of thing.
Yeah. You know, and I should have tacked this on to your question about the kind of work I do. What's been really interesting in the last number of years is how many schools I work with on an ongoing basis now, or we work out 4, 5, or 6 visits, not the one and dones. A decade ago, almost all my work was roll in, speak about something, roll out, and never know what kind of impact you had. That's shifted. That's shifted significantly.
Yeah, they realize that they need the support. They need to continue going back and visiting what you know, strategies you can help them with. So that's good to hear. Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Well, I am on Twitter at Myron Duick. My website, myronduick.com, are probably the two portals that I check the most often. Email, you'll find me myronduick@gmail.com. Lots of people, that's my number one way that people reach out, is I'll find an email in my inbox. When I'm not coaching my son's volleyball team and out with him building mountain bike trail, I might dive into other Instagram and so on, but I just haven't had the time to dive into every platform out there. So Twitter and my website are the biggest ones.
Okay. I'll make sure I link those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation on grading and how teachers and educators can use your book, and also how, you know, people are, you know, just shifting kind of the mindset about grading, especially in British Columbia now. So it's been a pleasure having you on.
Before I go, can I show you? Fits. I forgot all about it. I'm a collector of militaria items, and this is a 1917 U.S. trench periscope. So I thought if we're going to be out of the trenches, they would look into here, and they would see out of this lens right here, and it's stamped 1917, made in the United States. A World War I trench periscope. I thought I must show it on a podcast called Out of the Trenches.
Yes. So,
that's the history teacher in me. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. That's great. And that's probably as close as we've gotten to the World War I trenches with an artifact on the podcast.
There we go. One that the students find much more disturbing is a World War I caltrop. And you don't want to step on one of those and then put your boots back in the trenches. So,
oh gosh.
Yeah, a nasty little piece. But
yeah,
it's been my pleasure. And if you ever want to chat again, there's lots more where this came from. So I just appreciate the opportunity, and it's been lots of fun.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at OutOfTrenchesPC.